Blog Talk Radio.
On that report, I heard that she had a bruise on her face.
You say that they have taken the other children away from the home. Do you know why the children have been taken away from
them? Abuse and, I think, either neglect or endangerment.
Now she says she running. Don't care where she going. Long as she stay two steps ahead of them monsters. Say she gon' keep running. But them monsters faster than lightning, baby. No, you ain't gon' outrun them. He say he running too. Don't care where he running to. All he know is them monsters can't catch him if he stay on the move. So he keep it moving. But them monsters faster than lightning, baby. They catch you, don't care how fast you moving.
This child does not even have love from her own parents.
Yeah, they didn't have a good relationship. What do you mean? What happened?
How could a mother or grandmother turn their back on their own child? Ralph pretty much ignored Aaliyah. She was like a pain in the butt to him. She was left.
We all want answers. Where this beautiful little girl went missing to? Was he in trouble?
He's great for family.
Oh, he met his father. He didn't really get to have too much of a relationship with him.
Relationship with his stepdad.
At first, I got along, but then when he and I got more and more into our addiction, Colton probably thought that that's good. I tuned out.
Do you think that Colton was upset about this drug and alcohol use? Did he ever confront you or talk to you about these things?
One time,
and I lied. That was one of our last conversations.
Yeah, they say they running. Care less where they going. But all I know is we gotta bring them home so them monsters can't harm them. Cause I hear it storming. Monsters faster than lightning, baby. They may not have till morning. So let's bring them home. Gotta bring them home. Cause I know ain't no good gonna come looking for them. So let's bring them home. Gotta bring them home. Cause I know ain't nothing good for them out here all alone. So we got to bring them home.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Kimberly Clouk with the Bring Them Home Now radio show. My co-host, Rachel Jackson, was not able to join us this evening, but she will be back next week. Tonight we have a very special show. We are speaking with the wife of Jason Kiles. Jason Kiles is missing from Sonoma, California since February 2nd. He's 34 years old, a white male. He's 6'6", weighs 185 pounds, with brown hair and blue eyes. There are a lot of details that are available in this case. However, he's still not here, so we need to bring him home. I would like to welcome Rebecca. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello. Hi.
We also have an advocate on the line with us, Trudy, with the Court Jones Project. Welcome, Trudy.
Hi, thank you.
So, Rebecca, tell me, introduce us to Jason. Tell me what he's like.
Jason is a wonderful, I'm sorry, I'm going to try really hard not to be upset.
It's
Jason's
okay,
a fantastic husband. He's kind and gentle and sweet. He's very he's a very spiritual person. He owns a landscape construction business, and the reason he owns that is because he's not the kind of person that can be inside. He has to be outside. He loves nature. He loves being outside. He's a mason. He does amazing work with brick. He loves brickwork. And he's just a fantastic person. He's got a great sense of humor. He's a musician. He sings. He plays guitar. I can't say enough good things about how wonderful he is.
He sounds absolutely amazing.
He is. He's a gentle person. He cries at beautiful sunsets. He's just a sweet, sweet person. And he has had issues with depression in the past during the winter time when he's not working. It gets dark and it's cloudy and he's at home a lot and he just gets down about that. And so I just thought he had some depression issues. But apparently it was more than that and it became manic this time instead of depressed.
Was he on medication at the time that he disappeared?
He was not. He's very holistic. He's a vegetarian. He pretty much became vegan. He stopped eating everything except fruits and vegetables and nuts. And he just didn't want to take any kind of pills or medicine. And unfortunately, I didn't push that, which I wish I had of. But he just didn't want to he didn't want to go down that road. He felt that pills were a bad thing to do.
Well, and that's understandable as well. Let's walk me through. I understand that there were some changes going on within a couple of days of when he went missing. Walk us through, say, the 48 hours prior to him going missing so we can understand.
So normally Jason's a really quiet person. He's pretty mellow and easygoing and quiet. But the last couple weeks prior to his going missing, he wasn't sleeping, which now I understand is a big sign. But at the time, I didn't know. He was sleeping maybe an hour a night. He just wasn't sleeping at all. And the last couple days prior to him going missing, he was writing constantly. He was writing on his computer constantly. He was talking really fast. He went out and bought a top hat and was wearing it around. And I was, you know, he's got a funny sense of humor. He's really funny. And at first I was just thinking, okay, why do you want a top hat, honey? And he said, well, I like to walk to the river and wear it because people are so shocked by me because Jason's a really tall person. And with a top hat, he was probably over 7 feet tall. And he said, the people are scared and run away. And he said, it's hysterical. And at that moment, I thought, okay, there's a problem here. He's acting very oddly. And I even said, you know, what's going on with you? Are you having issues? You know, what's the deal? And he just thought it was funny. And unfortunately, I didn't push it to go see a doctor. I just thought it was something that he would get through.
And let me ask you this. Is he typically a jokester type of person?
He is a jokester. But this was more than that. And unfortunately, he is a jokester, but not to that extent. He's a jokester to his family and friends, but not necessarily to people that don't know him. And this, he was out there doing to people he didn't know, because he's very shy also. And so that was another indication that something was going on with him, and he was just talking so fast. And it's like he couldn't, his mouth couldn't keep up with his thoughts. You know, they were just racing. And so that's kind of how he was. And then when we were talking, he said that he said, I've decided I'm going to drive to New York and I'm going to go find Bob Dylan and I'm going to show him my music. And at first I thought he was kidding me. And then we talked about it some more and he seemed really serious. And so we talked about it for a long time. And I said, honey, you can't do that. You know, we don't have the money right now for you to go across the country, and I can't take off work. And, you know, kind of talking about going to see Bob Dylan, you don't even know if he's there or not. And I guess at one time he read a book where Bob Dylan went to Woody Guthrie's deathbed and showed him lyrics to songs, and Woody Guthrie liked them. And that kind of started Bob Dylan's musical career. And Jason really likes Bob Dylan. And so he wanted to go find Bob Dylan. And so he was talking about that a lot. And then the next day he said, I thought about it, and you're right, I'm not going to do that. That sounds crazy. I'm not going to do that. I don't know what I was thinking. So I didn't think any more of it. And that was Thursday. And then Friday I went to work at about 7 o'clock and he was fine. He was totally acting fine. He kissed me. He hugged me. He told me, have a nice day. He talked about what he was going to do. And then I left for work, and then I guess he started loading his truck up with all of the stuff that he decided he was going to take. And he took his clothes, he took a coffee table, he cut the porch light off the back of our porch, he took a bird bath, and he loaded his truck, and then he left me a note saying that he was going to go stay with his cousin in New York and that he would see me again really soon, not to worry, and that he loved me.
But he took a coffee table and a bird bath and your outside light with him?
Yes. He took it.
That was obviously not normal behavior for him.
No, the truck was so loaded. It was just completely loaded with objects. Like, just, he put flowers in his truck, and he took pictures off the wall, and some of the things he took drawings from. Jason's my second husband, and he took my children when they were little. He took a bunch of their drawings. He took guitar, all of his guitars. He took my son's guitar. He took my son's bike. Just stuff that's not, you know, it was just kind of, it was very odd. And so I got home and I read the note. And I thought at first he was kidding me. And I waited for him. I waited for him for like 2 hours. And then at some point I realized that it wasn't a joke. Then I called his mom and I asked her what to do. And we talked about it, and I kept trying to call his cell phone, and he wasn't answering. And then the next morning, I got a call from the Sonoma sheriff at about 11 o'clock saying that they found his truck, and it was up against Annandale State Park, and did I know him? And so I talked to the deputy, and I guess he had, instead of parking on the trailhead where it's public parking, he followed a lady onto her property. And he got out of his truck and he went and walked into her barn and was looking at her horses. And she went in and asked him what he was doing. And he was crying and he said that her horses were really sad. And she told him that he had to leave. And he said, I can't leave because your horses are so sad. And then she said, you need to get off my property. And so he walked off her property onto the state park trailhead. And that was about 9 a.m. Saturday morning. And I got there about 2 o'clock. I live in Sacramento, so it's a couple hours from Sonoma. I got there about 2 o'clock. His family got there. We started handing out pictures of him. We were walking up the trail looking for him. And at about 5 o'clock, a boy came down on a bike and said that he saw Jason on the trail and about 2.5 miles up from where we were standing. And he was naked with no shoes or socks on, and he was chanting. And we raced up there, but by that time it was starting to get really dark and we couldn't see, so we had to go really slow. And it was about 2.5 hours later that we got to where he was standing and he wasn't there. And they did a huge search and rescue effort for 6 days. And they found a couple of footprints, and that's pretty much it. They found footprints on the trail. They found footprints by the lake, which was about 2.5 miles away. And the dogs hit on the scent of him. If he's not in the lake, they did a really good search of the lake. The dogs, they didn't hit in the lake at all, and there's been no sign of him since.
Just a moment. Let's back up for just a moment. When you got there and somebody told you that they had seen him roughly 2.5 miles up the trail, it was getting dark. Did the search start that evening?
Yes,
or did
it
start the following day, that evening?
We started running up the trail about 5:30 or 5:45. The helicopter got there at about, I would say, 8:30 or 8:45. And there were two motorcycle police officers or sheriffs that actually rode up the trail on motorcycles at about 8:30. And the search started that night.
And did they bring dogs that night as well?
I was in a truck driving around with the ranger. So I wasn't involved with all of it. They definitely had dogs out the next morning at 5 a.m.
Okay,
I don't know if they had them
out
at night.
Fairly quickly then. Okay, good.
Right.
Good. Now, the first night, they found nothing at all?
They found nothing at all. They found his clothes on Monday, and they were about, I would say, about 1.5 miles from where he was physically seen, down lower. So he took his clothes. We're not sure what time he took his clothes off, but they found his driver's license. They found his shoes, socks, pants, and shirt. they haven't found his, we never found his wallet, and he never took his driver's license out of his wallet, so I'm not sure what that's about, but we haven't found his wallet, and we haven't found his cell phone.
And he did have a cell phone on him. Did they attempt to ping the cell phone?
It was turned off. He turned it off on Friday and never turned it back on.
Okay, so now we're on day two of the search, and they have found his clothes. But
yes.
He also had other items that were not found, right? Besides the wallet, there was a blanket, something else that was not found.
So Jason owns property in Nevada City, which is about 3 hours from Sonoma. It's a couple hours from Sacramento up in the hills. And there's nothing built on it. It's just land. We drove up there, and his mom and sister and dad went up there, and they discovered that he had left the blanket and the shoes there. And that we just found that out. So right now, the only thing that we know for sure that we're missing is a cell phone and a wallet. He took all of his tools, and he took a bunch of stuff that he owned and put on the land in Nevada City and covered it with a tarp.
And was that the stuff that he had taken that was in the back of the truck with the coffee table, the bird bath?
That was different. That was all of his tools, his business tools, electrical things, saws and things for his business.
And when they found his truck, was all of that stuff still in the truck?
Yes, it was loaded with stuff. And the door was unlocked. His passport and his Social Security card were in the dash just sitting there. And he used an electrical cord just to tie everything down. And that's really odd for him because he's so particular about tying loads down. And, because he has a lot of loads in his truck because of what he does, he's really meticulous about that. So it was really odd to see him just throw a cord over the back of his truck, a cut-off electrical cord.
Right. Okay. And they found, when did they find the blanket, you said?
A few days ago. We just discovered it a few days ago.
Okay. Now, in the meantime, I have to give you kudos. You have managed to rally people from all over to cover the park. Tell me about that. Volunteer searches.
Absolutely. Well, the sheriff's office and the search and rescue team, I can't say enough kind things. They were out there and they worked so hard looking for him. But then because of the kind of park it is, it's a mountain biking park and there's so many trails and people use it so heavily. We went on a forum and started talking about Jason, and I started talking with the mountain bikers and asked if they would help us. And so they literally would go out in 10 and 15 packs of 10 and 15 people, and they were riding trails. They were actually riding off trail. They were getting off their bikes and walking, looking for Jason. That went on for weeks. This coming Saturday will be 6 weeks since he went missing, and they're still looking. People are still looking for him. The community there has been amazing. They've been so nice about it. And I think that's the thing that's so frustrating. Where is he? We can't find him. If something happened to him in the park, we've walked on every trail in that park. We've walked off trail. We've probably done a really complete search of that park of at least two-thirds of the park, and there is no sign of him anywhere. And it's very frustrating. The thing about that park that's very interesting, it's surrounded by houses. There's houses all around the edge of it. There's big houses with land, and then there's a lot of tract homes. And no one has seen him. There's been no sightings of him.
So he's not been seen outside of the park at all. The last sighting was actually on the trail when you were arriving.
Correct. And over 1,000 people a weekend use that park, and no one has seen him.
That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. Trudy, feel free to jump in anytime here. I know you have to have some questions. There's got to be something you want to cover.
I do want to ask you, Becky, when did they find his shoes and blanket?
I would have to look on my calendar. It was approximately 2 to 3 days ago. They drove up to Nevada City, and I had gone there and I saw his tools, and I didn't actually raise the tarp and go through all of them because there were a ton of tools. And his dad asked if he could bring some of them back because they're expensive. And so when they started loading the truck with the tools, I guess they his shoes and the blanket were underneath those tools, and that's when they saw that, those items.
And where is exactly Nevada City at?
It's right above Grass Valley.
Oh, above Grass Valley. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it's about, I guess, about an hour from Sacramento north.
Okay. And you said, Becky, that he had purchased a bunch of food before
he
left.
Yeah, he purchased a lot of food.
Was all of the food still in the vehicle?
Well, he purchased 25 pounds of dried pinto beans, and they were in the vehicle. He purchased a bunch of pre-made food. It's hard to know if it was all in the truck or not, though. It wasn't in a bag. It was just, like, thrown in the truck, so it's hard to know. He bought $58 worth of pre-made food from a pita place, so I don't know if it was all there or not.
And that's a really good question, too. That's a good question, Trudy.
So when you say pre-made food, what, like pre-packaged food, like survival food or like?
It's a restaurant, and they make things and package it, like little like sesame cracker things and different items like that. So he bought $58 worth of like pre-packaged food.
Okay. Now, is that food that would last a long time?
It wouldn't last a long time, no. It would last maybe a day or two, most.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the other stuff, the pinto beans and stuff, that would last them a long time. Do you know if those were in the truck?
They were in the truck. They were. And I guess that's what I want to convey to people is this isn't a person that was depressed that wanted to end his life. This is somebody that I really believe that he felt like he was going to be going on this grand adventure. And he was going to get into the music industry somehow and make a fortune. And I mean, I think that's what his thought process was. And I actually talked to a doctor because I really wanted to know more about what he was thinking and why he took his clothes off. And I guess in the manic phase and the psychosis, a lot of times people get really either really cold or really hot. So when you see people that are street people that are wearing coats in the middle of the summer, the part of their brain that regulates temperature is telling them they're cold, even though it's really hot out. Well, with Jason, he took his clothes off because he was really hot. And so even though it was 38 degrees that night in the mountains, he might not have felt that it was 38 degrees. He might have felt really warm the whole night.
Well, and I understand that he was so taking meditation-type courses through
yes.
a monastery as well, correct?
Well, and he was into Buddhism for many years, probably at least 10 years, and he did do a lot of meditation classes. He went and stayed at the monastery for a few weeks. He was very heavily into Buddhism for a while. He hasn't been a practicing Buddhist for a while, but he definitely still meditated every day. He did chanting. So when he was walking on the trail doing the chanting, that to me is not unusual. Like, that would be Jason. The fact that he was naked, that was the unusual part. But the chanting was not something that I was concerned with. And it would actually have calmed him down a lot if he was upset or scared or agitated.
Well, and is it possible, I'm wondering, that it may have also helped him not realize the temperature around him?
Maybe. That could very well be true. That could very well be true.
Okay, go ahead, Trudy. I'm sorry.
Well, I was curious about that, the chanting in the park, and to what I wish we knew what chant he was saying and what reference to.
Right, and, you know, the boy that saw him, he was coming down the trail, and he came around a corner or kind of a bend, and he saw this tall, naked guy, so it scared him, and he immediately rode off trail and rode around Jason and then looked back and saw Jason again, and then he rode down more, and we had put flyers all over the park, and he saw one of the flyers and realized that's the missing guy, so he rode his bike all the way down, and that's when we met him. So he didn't, you know, he couldn't hear what Jason was saying, but Jason's hands were raised, and he was obviously doing a chant of some kind. But Jason was still at least 2.5, maybe 3 hours ahead of us on the trail, And by the time we got to where he was standing, I mean, he could have been, you know, if he decided to stop chanting and start walking, he could have been miles ahead of us at that time.
Well, he could clearly have left the park by then.
Yeah.
I mean, all the way around.
Well, and Trudy, describe those trails to us. Describe that park to us, because a lot of our listeners have never seen it. Describe that park. If somebody was to go on the trails in that park, how long would it find them, even if they got lost? How long would it find them to, I mean, how long would it take them to find people?
I'd say you could walk all the way around it, and within an hour, hour and a half, there would be civilization all the way around the borders of the park. Am I right, Becky?
Absolutely. There are houses and property around the entire park. And you can see at night when it's so dark, the lights are really bright. You can see lights from all of Santa Rosa, depending on where you're standing. And it's interesting because some of the houses and the property, it looks like it's state park, but it's actually private. So you can be walking around a bend and suddenly there's a house and a yard. It's kind of an interesting park. But you can hear dogs barking. You can see lights. You would know that there's a population around you, very close.
So if you had, for instance, gotten lost, it wouldn't take you very long to find your way out, provided you were uninjured?
Probably, I would say, anywhere in that park, you can walk out to humanity within at least 2 hours. So, for instance, if you're by the lake, you can walk out within probably 45 minutes and you hit houses.
Becky, so have you guys went door to door, excuse me, through the communities on the border of the park?
So one set of footprints that they found were very, very close to the edge of property, and it was called Oakmont. And when the search and rescue team found that set of footprints, we immediately started going to the Oakmont area. We went, and it's a gated community. The fire department let us in. We knocked on doors. We left flyers. We actually started searching all the backs of the property that adjoined the park, and we didn't find any signs of Jason, but definitely everybody in that community knew he was missing. They also did reverse 911 calls to some of the community, I think over by the Lawndale area where he was originally on, where he originally got on the trailhead. But there was a lot of media. There was a lot of, especially people that use the park, the bike riders and the hikers and the joggers. That first week, I would say every person that was walking in that park was helping look for Jason. They knew about it. And we've still continued. Every weekend I've gone to the park and hiked, and we run into people and we're talking to them, and they're kind of surprised, and they say, oh, is he still missing? But we still have flyers up throughout the park. You know, we're still making sure the flyers are posted. But I think everyone's a little surprised.
Becky, what was the weather at the park the weekend that he went missing? Was it raining? Or?
It was clear. And during the day, it was nice. It was in the mid-60s. It was beautiful weather. But at night, it got, the first night that he was out, it got 38 degrees. And the second night, if he was still out, it was 36 degrees. And it was probably about a little between 34 and 38 degrees every night that first week.
And have they had a lot of rain in that area since then?
No, they've had, it's rained twice. Once, right at the end of that first week, it rained just a little bit. And then the second time it rained about a week ago, and it was a pretty good rainstorm then. About a week and a half ago, it rained about an inch of rain. But overall, it's been really dry.
Now, let's go back for a moment. When they found Jason's clothes,
yes.
What kind of shape were they in? What kind of condition were they in? Were they clean? Were they dirty? Were they torn up? Were they...
So they were fairly clean. The jeans, the knees had a little bit of dirt on them. But for the most part, they were really clean. The one thing that we did notice that they actually told us about. So he took his clothes off. He didn't, like, take them off and fold them up. He took them off in a kind of an agitated state, so he took his shirt off and then he walked away and took his pants off and walked away, and it's like he almost was walking out of his clothes. He also tore all the tags out of all of his clothing. So they found all the little tags. They found the tags for his shirt, his pants, his even his shoes. He tore the tags off of everything.
Interesting. I wanted to ask one more time, just to clarify, the Nevada mm-hmm. City.
Yes.
Okay. So you're assuming that, I just want to make sure I understand this right, that his shoes and the blanket were there before he went missing.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I talked to the neighbor who lives above him, and they actually talked to Jason. So he went to Nevada City on Thursday, and the Thursday, I'm sorry, prior to him leaving. So that was, what, 31st? And he left this pallet of stuff at Nevada City. He talked to the neighbors. They said he seemed fine. He wasn't acting strangely at all. And he also took some sod, that I guess some leftover sod, off of his truck and left there. And then he talked to another neighbor about cutting down some trees, and then he left. But he was there pretty much, they said he was there all day unloading his truck.
Okay.
And nobody has seen him back there again. I guess basically the question, is there a possibility he could have brought those items back to that property? Is there any chance that could have happened?
No. And I talked to the neighbor, and they're retired, and she's looking for him. She said the second she sees him, she will call me and the police. And I talked to her recently, and she still has not seen him. And the reason I know for sure that he brought all that stuff, he drove his white truck. He brought the white truck to unload it. So that was the truck that he drove to Sonoma that we then ended up driving to Sacramento. It pretty much set at the Lawndale entrance. We kept hoping he'd go back to it. It sat there for days, 4 or 5 days, before we finally drove it back to Sacramento.
And I would assume that they've already checked things like homeless shelters, hospitals, jails, all of those kind of things as well?
Absolutely. Both the sheriff has sent out alerts to all the hospitals. We've hit all the homeless shelters. The first week we hit all of them in Santa Rosa. We've been to his mom and sister went to Humboldt, and because we decided we would look at every place that he loves. So they went to Humboldt, Arcata, Eureka. Another family member went to Santa Barbara because he loves Santa Barbara. I went to Berkeley on Sunday and hit homeless shelters and parks. And we're just going to start hitting all the cities, trying to get the word out, get his picture out, so people will continue looking for him.
Well, and let's back up for a moment. I have another question as well. Now, you said that his driver's license was found with his clothing, right?
Yes, yes.
But his wallet was not found. Now, I understand
correct.
That several of the purchases that he made on the way there were done with a debit card. Has
yes.
his debit card been used since?
Not,
or,
a, not at all.
And has it been found?
No, it has not been found. It has not been used. He has a credit card that has not been used and not been found. His wallet was thick with, you know, he had tons of stuff in his wallet. So, but he hasn't used it at all. And I'm checking on a daily basis, and it's never been touched.
And what has this been like for you? What is this doing to you?
This is a night. This is the worst nightmare anybody can imagine. I can't believe it's been 6 weeks. It's insane because the time is going by so fast. And you think, okay, well, he's going to come through the door at any moment. So you wait for him to do that, and he doesn't. Every time my phone rings, I answer it, and I'm hoping it's him. My 17-year-old son was killed in a car accident 8 years ago.
Oh, my Lord, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. And I know what it feels like to lose somebody that you love with all your heart. And the grief is overwhelming. But with that, you know he died. And you grieve him, and you feel the loss, but with Jason, it's so different because your mind never stops. One minute you're grieving and you're thinking about all the ways that something could have happened to him, and then the next minute you're so hopeful and you decide that he's out of the park and he's okay. And it's like this torture that never ends because you can't turn your mind off of all the possibilities of what's happened to him. And you just want some kind of relief. You want to know, you know, if he's in the park, we need to know that. If he's not in the park and he's alive, we need to know that as well.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. The not knowing is horrific. I understand completely. Goodness. Do you have a future search planned for Jason at this moment?
We do. We're going to be having a grid search on March 23rd, and we have a large group of very experienced hikers. They're people from the California militia, and they're going to be going along with some of our family members. We're going to start at Schultz Trail, which is at the lower part of the park, kind of a trail that's adjacent to the Longell Trail where Jason was found. Last seen on, and we're going to walk across the trail. And it's really a lot of manzanita. It's very thick. It's kind of steep. And so it's not a nice area, but it's one of the last areas in the park that really hasn't been thoroughly searched. So we're going to get that out of the way so that we know he's not in that part of the park.
And are they accepting volunteer searchers? If people wanted to sign up, how would they go about doing that?
They are. They can. We have on Jason's. We have a Facebook page called Find Jason Kyles, and they can sign up there. The one thing that we're asking people is not to sign up unless they are a very experienced hiker, because we don't want anybody else to be lost or injured. And this is kind of steep terrain. It's rugged, so only people that have a really good sense of hiking that know what they're doing should be volunteering.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that completely. Absolutely. Trudy, do you have any other questions for Rebecca?
I did want to touch on a couple things. One was, Rebecca, I think you had mentioned to me about, I'm not sure how to word it, but Jason kind of, I don't want to say fantasizing, but talking a lot about homeless people and living.
Mm-hmm. Well, specifically, I would say probably about a week and a half prior to him going missing, he told me, because he wasn't working at the time, his job had ended, because he goes, you know, he has his own business, and so he was waiting for his next job to start. And so he was free during the day, and he was going downtown to Sacramento, and he was crossing the street, and there was a homeless man who was in a wheelchair, and he asked him if he could help him cross the street. So Jason ended up spending about 3 or 4 hours with this guy. He hung out with him, and I guess the guy was waiting for the church to open so he could get a meal. And so Jason was kind of hanging out waiting with him, and they ended up going to Sutter's Fort and walking around, or Jason was wheeling him around. And he was talking to this guy, and he was telling the homeless man about how great Santa Barbara was and how if he were homeless, he would move to Santa Barbara because it's so beautiful. And he convinced the guy to call Santa Barbara and call around to the shelters. And Jason told me that he was pretty sure the guy got a bus ticket to go to Santa Barbara. But Jason felt like that would be the best. If you ever had an issue where you didn't have a house or a place to live, Santa Barbara would be the best place to go for you. And that's why we went to Santa Barbara. That's why we contacted the Santa Barbara police, because I thought, oh, you know, maybe that's where he went. And they did a great job. They looked all around. We got lots of tips, but unfortunately none of them panned out.
Right. Well, you know, the area, Santa Rosa area, I mean, it's so connected to the San Francisco Bay Area.
Right.
And it's just so... There's so many ways to go, and it's so easy for somebody to go off the grid.
Right.
It's so easy.
Well, and I asked the doctor about that because I kept having this feeling like, why wouldn't he call? I don't understand. We talked every day. We saw each other every day. and for him not, to have no contact, I just don't understand it. But the doctor said that when he, if he went to this this place of psychosis, which it sounds like he did, that when he heard the helicopters and he heard the people, his thoughts are, I can't call anybody, I can't trust anybody because they're gonna put me away. And so depending on what his auditory hallucinations are or what those voices are telling him as far as, you know, don't trust anybody, you can't call anybody, it's very common for people like that not to call.
All right.
Well, then let me ask you this now, because this brings up another question. I understand that there are several monasteries in the area. How difficult is it to get into a monastery as a participant if you were looking for some place to be undiscovered?
Well, I don't think it's that difficult. I mean, if you went there seeking refuge and were having issues, I'm sure, like any church, they would take you in. A lot of the monasteries have certain times that they're open for visitors and certain times that they're not. During the time that Jason went missing, the monastery that he used to go to, they weren't accepting visitors, and they were actually a lot of the monks were gone. But I did call and talk to one of the head monks, and he said that if he heard from Jason or saw him, he would immediately call us, and, you know, he would tell Jason to call us. But we did reach out to quite a few different Buddhist monasteries in the area, and so far none of them have seen Jason, but we're going to continue doing that because there are actually quite a few of them. And so, I mean, that's definitely a good lead to go towards, seeing if maybe he would try to go to a church or monastery.
Right, exactly. But without his driver's license, would he use his real name?
Well, and
you know,
that's
are
the
they
thing.
Just going by
know.
A description, or
yeah.
are they actually looking under his name? And how easy is it for you to get the information from them? Are they cooperative?
Yeah, they are. They're very sweet. They're very nice, and I tell them this story, and, you know, they're very sympathetic. But, you know, that's what I don't know, the registration process. Do you have to show a driver's license? You know, most religions, if you go to church or something, you don't have to show an ID, so I don't know if you would necessarily have to show an ID. I think if you stay there overnight or for a week or something, you may, but that's definitely a good question to ask them. Because there's a really good chance he might not be using his real name.
Oh, absolutely. If he dropped off his driver's license, that would identify him. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Wondering if maybe you're right, if maybe he is scared, if he does believe that somebody is hunting for him and out to get him, and
right.
perhaps he's trying to stay safe and stay secluded somewhere where his real identity would not be necessary.
Right, and I think that's a really good possibility. I think that's actually what's happening. And that's why the other thing we're going to be doing, and I just thought of it yesterday, I was thinking, why didn't we go to thrift stores? So we're going to start hitting all the thrift stores and showing his picture just in case he, you know, has enough money that maybe he could buy some clothes or something there.
Well, and that's a good point, too. Did he have a lot of cash on him?
He took out he probably had about $220 when he left Sacramento, and there were $60 in cash in his pant pocket. So there's a possibility he still has some cash if he has his wallet.
And if he does have his wallet, how much cash would you guess he would have?
I'm guessing probably about $60 because he didn't need to buy food because he bought a ton of food in Sacramento using the debit card. He had a full tank of gasoline. So unless he was making some other purchases, probably about $60. But he was making some strange purchases. He stopped in a kind of like an antique store and bought $200 worth of antique postcards and a first edition Dumbo book and some other just kind of tchotchke items. And he was in the antique store for about an hour. And this was in Sacramento.
Those items been found?
Yes, they were in his truck in a bag.
Becky.
Yes.
So, okay. So about $60 in cash and about 2 hours on foot to reach
mm-hmm.
any safe haven on either side of the park, right?
Right. And there are a lot of barns and outbuildings and things like that on some of the sides of the park. Some of the properties are pretty large. And so that's why we were asking people to check all their outbuildings, check their sheds and barns, because we were so worried that he went in there because it was so cold. But, I mean, it's been 6 weeks, and there's been no sign of him at all.
Not even any tips that he might be on the move somewhere? Tips that
nothing.
That give you a direction of travel? Nothing.
Nothing. And what's so interesting, I mean, that's the other thing, is Jason is not an average, you know, he's not 5'10 with dark hair. He's almost 6'7". He's very tall, and he's very thin. He's a very distinctive person. You can't really miss him if you saw him.
And we have a question coming out of the chat rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Would the monks call the authorities if somebody was clearly in distress? Typically, that would be their policy, right?
I would think so. And I don't know the answer to that, but it's something that I can follow up and find out. But I would assume if they were in some sort of distress, yes, they would.
I did read a little bit about the Montessori that you sent the link to me, Becky,
yes.
Last night.
Yes.
And you can actually go and stay.
Yes.
For mm-hmm. great lengths at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no really contact with the outside. There's no phones. There's no
right.
computers. There's no, you're up at 3 a.m. You get, you're working, you're doing your chores.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, and this is why I had mentioned Ukiah, because they had said that they go out once a week into Ukiah with the bowl, the donation bowls, because it's
mm-hmm.
they're solely funded on the community, and the monks hit the streets with their, I think, I can't remember, olms maybe they call
yes.
them.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
And they go into San Francisco as well.
They
and
do. Uh-huh.
I thought. And then we went in and looked a little more, and then there was the other, correct me if I have it right, the City of 10,000 Monks.
Right, right.
Actually in
City of
Ukiah.
10,000, right, City of 10,000 Buddhas.
Oh, Buddhists, that's what it was. And it's very heavily populated with Buddhists and a Buddhist community, and I think that would be a good place to
right.
look.
And I did, and that is a great idea. I did call that particular monastery, and I spoke to the monk there, and I also emailed Jason's picture to him, and he had not seen him, but he was going to keep the picture, and if Jason showed up, he was going to call. But I think it's good to always follow up, because, you know, it's a lot of these contacts happened weeks ago, and it's been
right.
weeks, and maybe they forgot or they've lost the flyer.
Correct.
So that's a good point.
And also, if he's... not exactly in the monastery. It is such a large Buddhist population there.
Right.
Maybe he's drawn to that.
Right, right. And that's a good point. And that's definitely a city that we're going to be checking out.
And when you're in a manic state like he was, and you're seeking refuge and seeking, you know, help, and I mean,
right.
it seems clearly like a place to go.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Definitely.
I would agree with that as well, actually, and considering his state of mind. Now, we only have 10 minutes left, Rebecca.
Okay.
So let's let everybody know Jason. Describe him to us. Make us see his face. What does he look like? Describe a little more of his mannerisms, things like that, so that people will be aware and people will be able to call in tips.
Right. So he would probably have some sort of a beard right now, unless he has found a razor. He has brown hair, but it's a light, in the summer it almost gets kind of a blondish color. So it's kind of a light brown color hair. He's got really pretty blue eyes. He's got he's thin, and so his face is thin and angular. I think he's probably the most gorgeous man on earth, but I'm probably biased. He's got the kind of face that when you saw it, people like Jason. He's got a nice face. He's a kind, nice person. And so he's got the kind of face that's very serene, very nice. He used to joke about it, as a matter of fact, because in his business he did good as far as like dealing with customers, especially women customers, because they felt comfortable with him, because he's not like this, you know, kind of gruff manly man. He's just a nice person, and it kind of shines through. They would notice him right off because of his height, because of how tall and thin he is. He looks like a basketball player. That's how I describe him. He has a really long torso. So he's got a 34 inseam, but he's almost 6'7", so his torso is really long. And just he's very quiet. He's normally a very quiet, gentle person. He doesn't do a lot of chatting or talking. It takes a while to get to know him. So I'm assuming that that's probably still the same. He's probably very quiet, which is probably why we haven't had reports of him. He's not being out there and being, you know, really talkative and hyper. And he's probably being very quiet and withdrawn, and so people aren't noticing him. That's what I'm thinking, and that's why we haven't had a lot of tips on him. And he's also very smart. I want to say that. He's so smart. That's why I feel with all of my heart that he got out of the park, because I know he was having some issues, and I know that it was bad for him that night, but I also know that he's so smart and he's so used to working outside that he would have gotten out and he would have gotten some sort of heat or warmth and not frozen to death in that park. But I would ask that everybody keep an eye out for someone who's really, really tall and thin and probably trying to kind of avoid people.
Now, he's not attempted to make any contact with any other friends as well, correct? Nobody?
That's correct. All of his friends have been out searching for him as well. Everyone is so worried about him, and they love him so much. You know, I can't tell you that. It's funny. I was just talking to somebody last night about the people that are calling saying, we want to help. We want to help find him. I think Jason would be blown away by the number of people that love him.
Oh, I bet he would. Community to come together like that, huh?
Yeah. And people that don't even know him, that have never met him. We have people that are out hiking and looking for him that have never met him. And they're doing like 9 and 10 mile hikes, and they're out there all day long. And once again, I can't say enough about that, the Sonoma community, the Santa Rosa community, the people have been so kind.
Well, it's wonderful. I'm glad you have the support of the community around you. That's definitely a must-have in a time like this. My heart is breaking for you. Oh, my Lord, my heart is just breaking for you.
Well,
we only have about 7 minutes left. If you had a message that you could give to Jason right now, if he could hear you from your heart, what would you say?
I would just say, come home. Home is where you belong, and nothing's going to happen to you. You're not in trouble. Everyone loves you so much. Please come home. I would just hug him and tell him everything was going to be okay. You know, during all of this, I never knew about the missing. I never even thought about it. And I've started reading the internet, and I've started reading about all these people that are missing, and it just seems like it's so many. And then I drive home from work, and I work in downtown, and I see all these homeless people, and it's just heartbreaking. All of these people are loved by somebody, and they could be missing, and people are looking for them too.
Absolutely.
Definitely, and you're right. A lot of people don't understand what a problem it is until it affects them personally. That's a very good point. It's just astounding and sickening, the numbers of people that go missing every day. And we don't want any of those to be forgotten.
No, none of them.
None of them. You're absolutely right. Trudy, did you have any other questions for Rebecca?
I do not have any more questions.
Rebecca, is there anything else?
I want to give her a hug.
Oh.
I know, right?
Thank you so much.
Yeah. That's a big hug.
Well, I will say that When I saw the doctor today, when I was talking to her about Jason, she said, well, were you guys having any kind of difficulties? And I told her, I said, no, Jason is the love of my life. And I just want people to know that as well. This wasn't because of him being unhappy. He loved his family. He loved me. He was having an issue, a mental issue. And I think a lot of people have these issues, and it's the shame has to go away, and we need to talk about it, because obviously this is something that keeps coming up over and over, and we need to start addressing some of the mental health issues.
I would definitely agree with you on that. I would definitely agree with you, because a lot of mentally ill people are afraid of their illness, and they're afraid that people are afraid of them. And a lot of times it turns into a situation like this, and that's very, very sad. It should never be that way.
I agree completely.
Is there anything else that you would like us to know about Jason?
Just please, please keep your eyes open, and if you see somebody that looks like Jason, go to Facebook and look at find Jason Kyles, look at his picture, and please let me know if you see someone that even resembles him. I will follow up with it.
And how do they contact with tips? Who do they contact for information?
There's an email address. It's findjasonkyles, K-Y-L-E-S, at gmail.com. And they can also call a tip line, which is 916-340-5242.
All right, everybody, let's keep an eye out for Jason. Again, he's 34 years old. He's 6'6". He weighs 185, brown hair and blue eyes. And his wife, Rebecca, wants him back home.
Yes. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
No problem, sweetheart. We'll be praying for you and for your husband that he makes it home safely to you.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Hug your children.